One of the interesting things in my research has been looking at some of these incidents about the transitions that communist countries have made to so-called free market ideology, and looking at the way they were covered in the Western press at the time versus the stories that are now, the narratives that are now emerging in these countries. Now, the Tiananmen Square massacre was reported in the Western press as exclusively students who wanted democracy up against a communist regime that wanted to protect its own power and was willing to use enormous force. Another narrative is emerging from China's new left, self-described new left, which is that, in fact, it was not only students, that these were protests against, lo and behold, Milton Friedman prescribed shock therapy program, that it was overwhelmingly workers who were opposed to the deregulation of their wages, the lifting of price controls, and the widening disparity. People wanted democracy, but they wanted democracy for a reason. They wanted democracy to oversee the economic transformation so that it could be widely shared and not simply be a transfer of wealth from the party elite to a new corporate oligarchy. When those protests threatened that economic project, then the tanks came in, then the tanks rolled. And it was the shock of Tiananmen that created the workforce in China that has been so profitable to so many corporations, the raw terror of a state that is willing to go to such lengths to roll over their students, their workers. That was a message, and it was the same message that workers got in Latin America with their shocks. That's how neoliberalism came to China. Now, in Russia, which was the next great success story for the movement, Gorbachev brought democracy in before he brought in the free market reforms. He didn't want neoliberalism. He wanted what he described as a new kind of socialism, a socialist beacon to the world. He wanted something on the model of Scandinavian social democracy. Well, he was shut down by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and rapidly ousted by Yeltsin. He had a team of economists who called themselves the Chicago Boys because they had learned everything they knew by reading pirated copies of Capitalism and Freedom and Free to Choose during the communist years. They weren't actually Chicago Boys. They were sort of knockoff Chicago Boys, but that's fitting for Russia because it has a very big black market. So, what happened in Russia was the same thing that happened in China, which is that the democratic reforms came into head-on collision with the economic reforms. So contrary to what we were being told at the time by Francis Fukuyama, that the history had ended, that democracy in the political sphere and free markets in the economic sphere were the end of the ideological evolution of mankind, I believe was his phrase. They were in fact in direct conflict because Russia's elected parliament voted to impeach Yeltsin and to stop what they called this economic adventurism. 67% of Russians told pollsters that they believed the best way to transform their economy was workers' cooperatives. They wanted to transform their centrally organized factories into co-ops. 80% of Russians told pollsters they believed it was the role of government to maintain full employment. They didn't have democratic support for any of these reforms. Well, when that became clear, that's when Yeltsin sent in the tanks, once again, just like in China. Thousands of riot police and soldiers descended on the Russian parliament. It burned. It used to be called the White House. It was renamed the Black House. Around 200 people were killed. Thousands were arrested. And then there was this a period of really dictatorial rule, and they called it the Pinochet option, actually. One of the things that was most interesting to me in doing this research was reading these quotes from Western economists who were in Moscow working for the World Bank, working for the IMF. They were so excited after this coup, which was reported in the Western press as Yeltsin standing up for democracy against anti-government forces as if the parliament was not the government, which is the equivalent of the American president bombing Congress. This is a quote from Newsweek. It said, Western economists working closely with the government say, with parliament out of the way, this is a great time for reform, which I love. Democracy out of the way, it's fantastic. And this is a continuation of the quote, the economists around here were pretty depressed. Democracy, depressing. Now we're working day and night. Indeed, there is nothing quite as cheering as a coup. Charles Blitzer, the World Bank chief economist for Russia, told the Wall Street Journal, I've never had so much fun in my life. Now, neoliberalism doesn't always need this level of violence in order to impose its agenda. I don't think it's about where it's being imposed. I think it's about the level of opposition that this agenda encounters. When it encounters mobilized, militant movements, that's when the tanks roll. That's when the army tanks roll. When the movements are less organized, the think tanks do the work. By think tanks, I mean the people who are paid to think by the makers of tanks. I thought of that one for Seth. In Canada, we experienced our own version of this crisis opportunism. Now, Yeltsin's coup is 1993. I want to read you a quote from John Williamson. John Williamson, well, his claim to fame is simple. He's the man who invented the Washington Consensus. He thought of that name and also explained what it meant. He is, what do you know? He works for a think tank in Washington and that is closely aligned with the World Bank and the IMF. And he has this uncanny knack for verbalizing the subconscious of capitalism. That's why I love him. He said this in 1993, the year of Yeltsin's coup. He noticed something in his research, which is that not only did it seem that it was important for there to be a crisis in order to impose what he called deep reform, which meant the Washington Consensus, but he noticed that the only cases where the Washington Consensus had been imposed were countries that were facing some kind of profound crisis.